Again, I apologize for my lateness. Today's topic is inheritance. We have two handouts. Please take one of each. The Torah gives us laws of inheritance, which are found in Sefer Bamidbar. And the Gemara tells us that if a person attempts to change the inheritance order of the Torah, for example, he writes his property to somebody else and leaves his children out, disinherits them, what he does is done, says the Mishnah Baba Basra. But, I'll take the extras. But, to use the words of the rabbis, Ein ruach hachamim, nocha heimenu. The rabbis are not happy with what he's doing. And the Gemara tells us a person should not change the order of the inheritance, even from a, as the Gemara puts it, from a bad son to a good son. And the question becomes, should this be the attitude that we have in modern times? So I'd like to begin by calling the Sefer Gesher Achaim. The Gesher Achaim is known as the Sefer on Hilchos Avelos by Rav Tkachinsky. He talks about inheritance as well. And he says like this. Since in generally speaking, the custom is to leave inheritance for one's daughters. It's also the state law in Eretz Israel. This is written a long time ago, but it's still true. One who has, quote, Eina Barosho, one who looks ahead, should make sure to leave money for his daughter in his will. Otherwise, the fear is, she'll go to court and receive the money by government fiat. And worse, frankly, they'll be involved, in his words, in riv and machlokas, in fighting. Listen to this quotation. Was a great Talmud Chacham who was wealthy, and he decided he was going to be a purist. And he decided to give the double share to his Bechor, to his eldest son, and his other sons got, and the daughters got zero. So he had three sons and three daughters. Half went to the eldest son, quarter to each other son, and the three daughters zip. I quote in Hebrew. V'hin chil sina v'tachres u'pirid b'mishpachto. And he bequeathed hatred and division to his family. So the people said, Lo kedayr lahashir rechush ulahorish sinna. It wasn't worth leaving any possessions and bequeathing hatred. Wow. This is from the Gesher Achaim of Tkachinsky, a member of the very, very traditional rabbinate in Yerushalayim, HaKodesh. So the question becomes, but what do you do? It says in the Gemara, you shouldn't be adjusting the laws of inheritance of the Torah. Ruach HaChamim Nocha Himenu. So if you look on the Mefarshim on the Yerushalmi, Baba Basra, they say the reason why you shouldn't change the order is because you shouldn't be, quote, Mecharcher Riv Bein Bonov Bein Achayim Shenosu Lehem. Shouldn't provoke arguments and fights between your sons and those who to whom you give the money. That being the case, not only if you take all the money and give it to other people, if you change it at all, you can cause fights. Not only if you give it to others, you give it to one son and disinherit all the other children. And in some ways that's worse. As we all know, a fight in the family is worse than a fight from to outside the family. The Rambam writes, Tzibu Chachamim is our third instance this year. Remember? Tzibu Chachamim. Shlo yeshana adam ben abonim b'chayev, afilu b'dover mu'ot. Shlo yavol adei tachus v'kina kach yosef im yosef. It's about on Shabbos. Only a yavaka adam ben abonim, don't be spray prejudice to one or the other. That's what Yaakov Avinu's mistake with Yosef HaTzadik, and led to our terrible golus in Mitzrayim. So the Bach in Yochosh Mishpatzim and Reish Pei Bei says, only b'chayev. Ram says b'chayev. But before his death, do whatever you want. Why? It says, V'hoya b'yom hanchilo es bonav. pasuk in Chumash, in Sefer Devarim. And there we are taught that an individual has the ability to make changes in the inheritance within his sons. He has three sons. Let's say none of the Bechor. Three sons. So each gets a third. He decides to give all to one, or divide it a half and to a quarter each, whatever he wants to do. This he has the power to do. Mefurash Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says his famous din, that a person has the right to do so. So the Bach is bothered. How does this square with what the Chazal say? The person should have a vaka lebein ben abana. So he says, depends. We're talking about in the middle of his lifetime, or just before his death. Seems that the Torah rejects this and says that there's a problem even close to his death. We'll understand. The Gemara just says the Dvar of Kayomim. If a person says, I want my next door neighbor to inherit me, the words are air, meaningless. You say, I want my son to inherit me, this son as opposed to that son, then the words have meaning. But it's still considered wrong from the perspective of what we call Havoras Nachla. Even according to the Rambam, Sivu Chachamim, as we said already three times, in the context of Talmud Torah, in the context of husbands and wives and how they relate to each other, is an Eitzah Tova. I would say the opposite of the Bach. That's in your lifetime, it's an Eitzah Tova. Close to death, when it already goes into the category of bequeathing, then it's worse. Then it's Ein Ruach Chachamim No Chaymenu. In any event, since if the Perush and the Rishalmi is correct, that the whole reason for this Ein Ruach Chachamim No Chaymenu because you're going to cause fights, today it's the other way around. Today, if you go with the pure din of the Torah, it's going to cause fights, as the Gesher HaChaim testifies. And as we said many times, if it's something that's an absolute prohibition, what are you going to do? We're stuck. But it's Tzivul Chachamim, then, like we said about the Chavetz Chaim, it used to be a good advice that the girl should not study Torah. Now it's good advice that girls should study Torah. No need for an Eis Lasses Lashem. It's just, we could just say that the advice, good advice changes based upon the Chachamim of each and every generation. So what's about the Torah?
So
Torah just says what happens when a person dies intestate. Torah doesn't say what a person may or may not or should or should not do.
What did you mean by the fact when you said a person wants to bequeath his money to his neighbor, it means nothing? What does that mean?
A person will say, after 120 years, I want my neighbor to inherit me. It's meaningless because once a person's dead, he cannot transfer his funds.
Correct.
So when he dies, it goes automatically to his sons.
Okay.
And the neighbor is left with nothing.
Okay, so in the Torah perspective, there is no such thing as a will.
Correct. A will to take effect after death, a person loses control of his money after he dies.
Okay. Right. So again, the Torah says, we don't have wills, this is the law. You should give your children this much and this much and this much. End of story.
Not you should give, it happens by itself.
Or it happens by itself.
Right.
Okay, so now I don't understand how you can, you know, like it's not like a law like we were talking about you know, Kolisha or something like you can argue about it, but the Torah doesn't mention it. Here the Torah explains it exactly.
100%.
Now you want to change it.
No, I'm not going to change the law of the Torah. We'll make there is one way you can change. That's it says you can change the number of dollars that each son inherits. That's a gzeres hakasul. The person is a Rav Yochanan ben Broka's din. A person can change. But Yoman Chilu was Bonav. But it's all within Bonav. Your daughter can't do it for your daughter if she has a brother. It doesn't work. So therefore, it seems to me that the only way to do it is to avoid a fight, is to do something when you're alive, to see to it that there will be no fight. It seems to me, and I'm saying this very forcefully, that the proper way to do it is to see to it that the sons and the daughters all inherit equally. Now, is this going against the laws of the Torah? No, not at all. We had a famous discussion in past Shiurim about Darshinan Tama Dekra. that the Torah gives us an explicit law, we don't discuss the reasons, the law is the law, and we just follow it. But here, it's what we call a drasha. A drasha. It's not an absolute explicit verse in the Torah. And they have a darshina in time of the drasha, as we've said in the past. And the Ramah said so. It's not me. The Ramah. Hold on. The Ramah says, Harotze lachlok nechosav achre moso, shle arivu yorshav achrov, verotze lasos seder tzava ba'oda bari, do this and this and this and this. So therefore, it's clear that the, that we said before, what may be an understanding based on various considerations, which are not explicit in the Torah, Ruach HaChamim Nocha Himenu, things of this nature, nowadays, the time of that Ruach HaChamim is to maintain peace amongst the members of the family. The only way to do it today is that everybody should get exactly the same amount of money. As a matter of fact, the Ramah is referring to what we call a Shtar Chati Zocha. Let me explain what that means. A Shtar Chati Zocha was something which went back to the time of the Ramah, and even earlier, that it's already in the Maharil, that there were individuals who wanted to give their daughters a half a share of the sons. Let's say they have two sons and two daughters. So by Torah, two sons, if there's no Bukhar, 50-50, two daughters get nothing. And by this device, Shtar Chati Zachar, what's effected is the two sons get a third each, and two daughters get a sixth each. We'll see how it's done in a minute. And this is something which was done in the time of the Ramah, which made peace, because the daughters were happy to get a half a share, because since they got nothing, and this is considered to be a liberal approach, give them a half a share, so therefore they were very happy with the half a share, and that was that. And it was not considered a violation of the law, the spirit of the Torah, because that was necessary to make things better. Truth to tell, they did it in a fascinating way. Girls had a hard time getting married. I think nothing has changed that much. And in order to sweeten the pot, so that a girl should be more attractive candidate for marriage, what they would do is, they would give not only an adan up front, which they gave a certain amount of money, a dowry, but they would arrange that this girl would be an heir of the father after 120 years. Now maybe the father now is 40 and the girl is 20 and it takes another 80 years till he turns 120. Well, they didn't live that long in those days. Nonetheless, a 20-year-old chassid may say, look, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That when the Shver Leben, as they used to call him, Shver Leben will no longer be Leben, whenever that'll happen, there'll be one-sixth of his Yerusha, of whatever he leaves up, will go to him. Oh, I love this girl more now than I loved her yesterday. You know, that's just reality, you know. And they made it in an irrevocable fashion, so that it shouldn't be a trick. And it was done in order to help the daughter find a better chance of getting married. That was called Shtar Chati Zocha, as it was done then. Now, how does it work? Let me give you a brief understanding how it works. What a man can do in his lifetime, there are many things you can do. You can give a gift in your lifetime. That's an easy way. You can just say to your daughters, here's $1 million. Yeah, I'm 80 years old. Here's $1 million. You expect that to be, you have a one son and one daughter. You have $2 million in the bank. You give a gift of $1 million when you're 80 years old to your daughter. A gift? Nothing wrong with that. The problem is, parting with money is not such a good idea for an 80-year-old. As a matter of fact, the Shalah HaKadosh already says that giving money away in your lifetime is not smart. And the reason is, I'll read you the Shalah. Fascinating. I don't know. I want to say I'm not an attorney. I don't know anything about gift taxes. Anyone a state attorney here? Are you in the States? No. But you're a little law background. Okay. I can't speak to gift taxes. There are people who do all kinds of things to avoid the government's estate tax, I should say. And you have to consult an attorney. I have no expertise. Although I have consulted with estate attorneys when it came to formulation of a document, which I'll describe in a few minutes. The Shalah says that he saw certain people when they became wealthy and they were elderly, they gave their children a huge sum and they kept for themselves enough to for the rest of their lives. Shtus gadol. It's terrible silliness. which could lead to an avera gedola. Why? You can't predict the future. Maybe the father will lose whatever money he has left. The oil of Ashayovo al Shulchan Bonov. Woe unto a father who has to come on to the table of his sons. Kiudova shenegara teva. It's against nature. You should be taking care of your sons, not the sons should be taking care of you. Therefore, a major gift can work, but it's a bad advice. So I can't give it from a halachic perspective. I'm not discussing now different tax deals. I can't talk to that. But the Shalom says it's a bad idea. Okay, it's a bad idea. We probably shouldn't be doing it. So now, this being the case, that's a bad idea. Now the question becomes, how do we handle things? So the whole discussion about giving gifts in one's lifetime, which seems to circumvent the laws of inheritance, and I can't go into the details now for a variety of reasons. One of them is our late start, which I apologize for again. There are a number of interesting responses. Rav Moshe Zatshuva, Choshen Mishpat Chelik Bei Simen Nun. He says as follows. If you intend to disinherit one of your children, it's bad. It's a violation. Aval hecha de kavani lemitzvus atzdaka, if you want to give money for charity, poshut shemuter kshemeiniach layorshin davar chashuv. If you are not giving, if you give all your money away to charity, that's the gemara, it's not allowed. If you transfer the money because you want to disinherit a bad son, shouldn't be done. But if you give some of your money away to tzedaka, not because you want to disinherit the son, you want to give the money of its tzedaka, Rav Moshe says this is allowed. That being the case, so it would seem that if you want to disinherit a son, it's problematic. But if you want to, how should I say, give money to a daughter, it seems to me that should be allowed.
Like a tzedaka.
I'm not saying it's a case of tzedaka. I'm saying that it seems to me that this would not be a violation. According to Rav Moshe, the only violation is if you're giving from bra bisha to bra tova, from a bad son to a good son, because you want to disinherit the bad son. You know, I'll show him. Don't be so smart.
How did he allow, I'm just curious, how he allowed transfer to a charity, but not allowed transfer to anybody else?
No. Rav Moshe seems to say that the thing which a person should not be doing is purposefully disinheriting a son, no matter how bad his behavior is. That's what you should not be doing.
I say you can't give the money. You can't give even part of your money to your neighbor.
No, this is a lifetime gift.
A lifetime.
Yeah, only this doesn't lifetime gifts. Okay. Lifetime gifts. Okay, fine. Interesting. The Ramban says in Sefer Mitzvahs Yud Beis, in his own mitzvahs, that if we should follow the laws of the Torah. The Torah gets Pishnayim. And don't think that it's only a you cannot do. No, it's more than that. You may not do. So that's the Ramban in his Chumash as well. However, Tosa seems to reject the Ramban and say no. It means you cannot do. Not that you may not do. Interesting. It seems to be a dispute between Tosa and the Ramban, as the Or HaChaim and Chumash already points out. And if you look in the Sfarno, and also in Chumash, you get an impression that what the Ramban says based on the verse of a Bechor, which is found explicitly in the Torah, in Parshas Kisetze, applies to other inheritances as well, nothing to do with Bechor, even the Yerusha of the plain children. Bottom line is that, as we said before, giving a gift in one's lifetime to a child is not such a good idea. The Gemara has the Mesechta above a Metzia Ayin Hey. Shlosha tzokim ve'enam nenen. What's that? Hakona odon liatzmo. You require a master for yourself. How do you do that? Hakosev nechosav lebonav b'chayav. You're requiring your children as being your masters. Don't do it. I'm saying it again. I'm not your tax attorney. If the tax law says you should do it, you know, make some kind of a side deal. If it's going to work, I can't speak to that. But if you take away taxes, I wouldn't do it. So what are you going to do? Give it now. No. Give a gift effective 1 minute before my death. Hey, that's not bad. Only one problem. What's the problem? You don't know what that money is. So what? You'll find out later. This may run afoul of the principle called Brera. Ein Brera means there's no retroactive clarification. Nonetheless, if you look at certain svarim and they get pashut, and Simon Kuf Chav Beis, he says it does not, that does not ruin this gift. The gift is going to be a good gift anyway. Okay. Nonetheless, it becomes difficult to make something effective later on, because what kinyan are you going to use? We said kinyan chalipin, which is a handkerchief, only works something if it works immediately. Because once the handkerchief goes back, is what's called kolsa kinyana. It's not gonna work. If you want to transfer real estate, that can work with a document. With a document, I hereby transfer you this house, effective 1 minute before my death. So even though according to the simple pshat in the Gemara Gittin is no good, the Gemara later in Gittin to get pushed, it would be good, at least according to some. But there's another way to do things. It's called Guf Mehayom and Peiros Le'achamisa. And the Shulchan Aruch talks about it. What does that mean? It means the object in theory belongs to you now, but the fruits, the profits, only come after death. So right now you have theoretical title to it, you my son, you my daughter, the case may be, but Lemaisa, de facto, you can't get access to the profit from this object until after death. This sounds very much like what we call a trust. I think so. A trust. This sounds very much like a trust. So there are different kinds of trusts in the Shulchan Aruch and there are different kinds of trusts in New York law. A little homework on it. The Shulchan Aruch speaks of two cases. One case, revocable and irrevocable. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the same thing applies in New York State. There could be a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust. So you can put money in a trust fund when you're still alive. And the give and take to your daughters, it belongs to your daughter by the laws of the Torah. It's like Guf Mehayom and Peiros Liachamisa. And if you want to make it revocable, you got to put a proper condition to make it revocable.
We were talking before you came, I suggested like if you buy a CD and you give your daughter a CD, but the CD is in 20 years, is that a way to get around the...
The problem, of course, becomes.
But well, you don't have control of it either.
Exactly. If you all the rest of your money you lost in the market, you want to live on this CD, it's not yours. Now, is there tax, estate tax, on a trust? It's complicated. It's revocable is one rule, and irrevocable is another law. It's quite complex. Quite complex. It seems to me. That according to American law, from my research, a trust is an independent entity, like a corporation. And halacha, generally speaking, does not recognize corporations. Rather, if there's a corporate entity, if the money belongs to the shareholders, except as a condition of limited liability. Okay? When it comes to a trust, what is it? It's really hard to know precisely what it is based upon the laws of the trust. Is it considered to be Guf Mayom and Peiros Achamisa, which would work from the perspective of Jewish law? Or is it only a Matan Liachamisa, which would not work? So let me tell you what I think, broadly speaking, about this issue as follows. Let's say, for example, there's a couple. And a couple has either a joint bank account, we spoke about this in previous shiurim, or they're probably the single most valuable asset is the house. And the house is in joint names. I think that's how it's usually done. I think so. What happens? Is there survivability? What does that mean? If the bank account is in Reuven and Rachel's name, or the house is in Reuven and Rachel's name, the law is, based upon the small print, if Reuven or Rachel dies, the entirety of the bank account or the entirety of the house belongs to the surviving spouse. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I thought
it can be. It depends. The different rules for different things. Certainly, if it says joint tenants with right of survivorship, then that applies.
Right.
In some cases, it's automatic unless you specify otherwise. For instance, in co-ops, they changed a couple of years ago. It used to be that it needed to say that in order for it to be joint tenants.
Now, when they
take title. It's in joint name. It's presumed to be that unless they specify. But there are other things called tenancy in common, in which case my share is my half, and the spouse's share is the other half, and they go in separate directions.
Right, that certainly can be. My guess is, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I think, I'm talking about the old-fashioned nuclear family, the connected family, that they would presumably, I think in most cases, have whatever you described as being the survivorship.
Joint hands with right of survivorship.
I think that's probably more common.
Yeah, but it's not automatic.
Right. No, I understand. I never said it was automatic, but I think that's a very common, and the same thing, I think, in a bank account. I think it's very common that it be done that way, although obviously it's not the only level. What happens in that kind of a case? In my opinion, this completely bypasses the laws of American inheritance laws, that's what I was told, and Torah inheritance law. It's not an inheritance. It's not an inheritance. It just bypasses all the laws. Now, it seems to me that this is true in the case of a bank. It's also true in the case of a home, although there's a difference between a home and a bank. Usually when it comes to a bank, either party can just take out what he or she wants from the accounts. Right? That's why I get older when they have these divorce spats. They both try to stop the account. And we've been in there too many times already, things of this nature. When it comes to a house, on almost every case that I know about, neither can sell his or her share in the house at the permission of the other. That's what little that I've discovered from my readings and speaking to different people. In any event, it seems to me this bypasses inheritance. And I think the same thing applies to insurance policies. If it's a beneficiary. So that's not Yerusha. The person takes out an insurance on his life for $1 million and he dies. And his wife's the beneficiary. That's not a bequeathing. That's just an insurance payment. As far as I know, all these things have nothing to do with the laws of Yerusha, neither in American law nor in Jewish law. That's my understanding, although not everyone agrees to me in these matters. How would we define in a strict halachic perspective the idea of survivability? I think it's like with the Gemara in the Sefer Baba Basra, Kuflam and Vav, Nichsi Lach Vachrecha Leploni. I'm selling it to you, and after your lifetime, it goes to somebody else. So who did that? In effect, what happened was, when Reuven and Rachel bought the house from John, and John sold the house, who did he sell it to? He sold it to Reuven and Rachel. Yeah, but small print. He sold it to Reuven and Rachel. I guess it's probably in the deed, right? I think so.
Yeah.
So some legal form. That when John sells the house, who's he selling it to? He's selling it to Reuven and Rachel with whatever you call rights of survivability, which means that it belongs to them both now. And if whoever dies first, it belongs to the other one. So John didn't care too much about this. John is not thinking, he's a young couple, each in their 30 years old. He's not thinking what's going to happen 50 years from now when one of them dies. He's already himself 80. He's not thinking what's going to happen 50 years down the road. But in effect, what he's done is, he sold it to Reuven and Rachel. Nichsilach, I'm giving my house to you both. I'm giving it to Reuven 50%. And if you die first, it goes to Rachel. I'm giving it to Rachel 50%. If you die first, it goes to Reuven. And this is not spelled out in that halachic terminology. That's what, in effect, boils down to. So I understand. Now, there is a way to get around the problem that we just spoke about at the beginning of this year. Namely, that once you die, there's nothing that's going to be, nothing to do about it anymore. That's an expression called, in Gemara Baba Basra again, Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Hames. However, in Shulchan Aruch, we are taught that it only applies in a case in which you gave the money in your lifetime to an agent, so that this agent is commanded to carry out your mitzvah, your command, and disperse the money the way you asked him to do it. So therefore, a person in his lifetime can give $1 million to a friend. So this is my money. If I want it back, you have to give it to me. But if I die, I'm asking you to give this $1 million to my daughter. That's going to work.
Is that person Shomer Chinam or something?
That's another good question. What kind of status will the person have?
But he can't use the money.
No, he can't use it for himself. That would be, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I guess it's probably put in the bank.
In
the bank.
So that'll work.
Okay, that could work. As it's called, Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Hames.
And it wouldn't get into the problem of, if God forbid you needed the money later.
No, you can take it back. Whenever you want, you can take it back.
What happens if the agent dies?
All right, that's an excellent question. I'm sure there's some legalese. It's your money, so it's presumably...
How do I get it back?
How do you get it back? Well, the presumably... These are good technical questions you're asking. Excellent technical... They're really very good technical questions. I'm really not able to answer them fully at the present time. How you would do such a thing, maybe it's not advisable even legally to give the money to somebody in the hand.
We were talking about this
before. Yeah, so there's a problem. But I wanted to discuss this topic from the perspective of what's the lumdus? Why should mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis be limited to a case in which you gave it to somebody? This is that the Gemara doesn't say that. Rabbi Natan said it, based on a bunch of kashas. Tosas of a kasha from a different Gemara. So this is the answer that they gave. But just because they gave this answer, you have to understand what the reasoning behind it is. And if you understand the reasoning behind it, it can have extreme relevance to our discussion in terms of maybe, just maybe, a secular will really is effective. Yes.
I know it's short time, but right before you came, I mentioned to Ron, I said I thought of a way to go about it without this whole complication, and it was that you gave it to a third party, and et cetera.
Good.
But I thought that in order for that to be effective, you would have to really give it to that party. Now,
yeah.
I can't just say, my money, like be a showmer.
No.
You have to give it to him, like, here's a present, but I trust you that you won't do anything else.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why should you be allowed to do that? It's just like putting it in a safe place. You know, like, what's the difference?
That's the question I just asked. Okay. Why should... Make up your mind. If it works, Mr. Kandi Ramayitz, it should always work. And if it doesn't work, it should never work. Why do we say that if you have it in your own hand and you say to Chaim, I want you to take this money after I die, give it to my daughter, it does not work? Because the daughter gets it, shalom. Because the son gets it, and then the daughter has nothing. If you give it to him in his hand, then somehow automatically the principle of Mitzvah Kandi Ramayitz works. Why should that be so? Now, again, Tosis says it based upon a question they have. They come up with this big chiddush. And I'll just end the shiur with this. We're going to have to finish this next time. I don't want to keep everybody late. There's an interesting case. The case which they discuss, the Gemara in Gittin Daf Mem. Plonis shifchasi osali koras ruach. This shifcha was nice to me. I want to emancipate it upon my death. It was something you read about some of the presidents, that they emancipated their slaves after they died. You know, great tzaddikim. You know. But does that work? So the Gemara says yes, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis to free her upon his death. Why? She wasn't given over to a third party. So there are two answers to this question. Tosis answers, shichur is different, emancipation is different. They don't explain why. Whereas the Mordechai answers, shehi atzma shlisha. She, like I give her money to a shlish, to a third party, to hold the money, it works. Here, she is the third party who's holding. Who's holding herself for herself? What does that mean? But she belongs to the master, and then she belongs to his sons. Pasuk says so, right? It's nachalta l'resh lachuz l'olam mem tavodu. Seems to me as follows. This is my understanding that according to the Mordechai's interpretation, it's a matter of de facto and not de jure. This shifcha has the ability to free herself. How so? The husband, the master died. She'll walk away. Who's going to catch her? She'll walk away. The mevashe has the ability de facto to secure her own freedom. Makes it the equivalent of a shalish de facto. Tosis does not give that answer. So Tosis presumably holds it goes de jure by the law itself, and this can have tremendous relevance to the case of a secular will. I'd like you to again. I apologize again for being late. Take home the source that I gave this week. Read it over between now and next Motzei Shabbos. Next Motzei Shabbos, we're supposed to be talking about positions of authority, which is another, that's a much more hot topic, if I may say. But we'll get to that. But the first half of the Shia, we'll try to finish up this issue of how a Shtar Chatzizacha could be applied in the modern world with a last will and testament, which I advise should be done. We'll discuss the details later. And I already told you we discussed it. All the children should get equally, in my view. We'll discuss those details. And after we finish that, we'll move on to the next topic. Again, Shavua Tov, and I'm sorry for I was being so late.
8 o'clock.
The next 2 weeks, both all 8 o'clock. And